This is a special feature produced for download from ABC Classic FM's website. Due to copyright restrictions on the music, it's been edited to make this possible.
Greetings to you. Margaret Throsby here with the midday interview on ABC Classic FM, the next in our series of repeats. One of the most alarming reports prospective homeowners can receive is that the pest inspector has found evidence of termites. It sends a cold shiver down the spine, especially if the termites are still active. Termites are incredible little insects. They can achieve big things. They build skyscrapers. They can hollow out a huge tree. And, of course, they can eat your house, literally. So we need to take them very seriously indeed. Termite expert Dr. Don Hewitt takes termites seriously, and he doesn't hate them at all, far from them. From it, he's one of their great admirers and defenders. Obviously, nobody wants termites munching away at their house, but what purpose do these insects serve in the environment? And do people really fry them up and find them delicious to eat? Don Hewitt's been studying termites for decades, and as the weather in Australia hots up and termites start thinking of dinner, this is a timely conversation. Here's Don's first choice of music. Trumpet played by Crispian Steele Perkins. I love that name. Tafel music directed by Jean Lamont. And the march from Scipio by Handel, chosen by our guest, Dr. Don Hewitt. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell me about that piece of music.
Well, imagine a small boy at a very long and boring military event. And then after all sorts of improbable things just quietly take place, they salute a dignitary by paying a very short piece of that piece of music. So you get an absurdly fast band rendition that is all exciting, and then it goes back to being really boring. And that's one of my strong memories as a kid of going to these military events.
Really? You were the little boy in question.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Well, so that's
it was
sweet.
Kind of fun. It took me ages to find out what the music was. I thought it was General Salute, but that apparently takes place afterwards. But I wrote to the brand manager of Army, and they found it for me.
Well, it comes from Scipio, but yes. one of the Handel works. Don, I think we'll unravel this story and start right back at the beginning and find out exactly what termites are. Are they white ants?
No, termites are not ants. If you think about an ant has a narrow waist. It tends to be dark and fast moving. And if you look closely, they've always got antennae that are elbowed. Termites have antennae that are like a string of pearls, and they don't have a narrow waist. They're much more like me. They're sort of frumpy things that walk slowly, and they're generally creamy coloured, but termites are social cockroaches.
Are they related to cockroaches?
They are cockroaches.
They are cockroaches.
Yes. Once they had their own order, the Isoptera, because their wings are of equal size, but now they've been placed back in the cockroach order.
How big are they?
Oh, they vary. Most of the ones that eat your house are only about 3 milligrams. They're only a few millimetres long. So,
Like a grain of rice? Like a grain of rice, okay.
If you think of the ones attacking your house, imagine something about as big as a cat that's made up of grains of rice that act individually or come together, and that's sort of what you're up against.
How many different kinds of termites are there in the world?
Oh, that's a big question. It depends whether taxonomically you're a splitter or a clumper. So it's something between 3,000 and 4,000 different species.
Do they occur all over the world in cold climates as well as hot?
They have occurred all over the world, but they are about 50 degrees north and south. It gets very tough for them. They're not good in places that are very cold. So they survive in Toronto, where they sort of work for about 12 weeks of the year and hide out in heated houses.
Mm. What about in Tasmania?
In Tasmania, we have the original Gondwanan remnants. So we've got the dampwood termites, but they're not really a pest of houses unless it's very, very wet. They need very wet wood. So they turn up. They used to eat people's laundries back when there were coppers and timber built close to the ground. They're a pest in bits of Tasmania, occasionally in derelict houses, and they turn up a lot in the Blue Mountains for some reason.
Can I extrapolate from that that Darwin and northern Queensland would be termite heaven?
Oh, best. I do my testing on the tablelands behind Cairns, where they work very hard all year round with no problems.
Okay.
Darwin's pretty bad.
What are their, just, who are their enemies? Who are their main predators?
Principally ants. If you look at the soldier termites, most of their defence mechanisms are aimed at ants. Ants are pretty numerous and termites are slow moving and good food.
Can termites fly? Can they see?
Most termites are completely blind. The ones that develop into the mature insect, because most don't properly mature, they develop wings and they can fly off. That's their reproduction, which is happening pretty much around now, most of the way around the country. It's the weirdest strategy. It's like, have you seen them fly? You see thousands.
Well, I've seen what I think are termites flying, but I don't know. Clusters of flying insects.
Yeah, they flutter. It's never very windy. And the trick to know that it's them is that when they land and choose a good food site, they snap their wings off. So if you see piles of wings, those were termites.
Oh, gosh.
Because they're no good once you've dug in. They don't
come out again.
They're
very efficient, aren't they? You can grow a pair of wings and then snap them off when you don't need them anymore.
Yeah, but they have this weird reproduction where every year about a third of their profit margin, or their production of the colony, grows wings and flies off. And it wouldn't be one in a thousand that starts a new colony.
So they're flying blind?
No, those ones have wings, have eyes. They're sighted.
And
they're
do they develop and shed eyes like they shed their wings?
No. Once they've flown and shed their wings, they dig in, start the new colony, and then the future generations take over looking after them. They get larger. The female tends to put on a new set of ovaries every time she molts her skin, so they often get quite huge. They call that physogastric.
How do they mate? Do they mate on the wing, do they?
No. They mate once they've settled down, and they mate relatively often, apparently.
How many eggs does she lay?
Oh, that's a good question. Most species, after the first mating, wouldn't lay more than 30 to 35 eggs. But some
at a time?
In that first batch.
Yeah.
But once they're physogastric and mature and have multiple ovaries, some of the African ones will lay 2,000 eggs a day.
And then tomorrow too?
Yeah.
And then the day after too?
Well, they have some down periods, but pretty much that's the average.
What do they eat?
All of the termites are cellulose feeders. So anything with plant fibre that isn't protected by oils and resins or poisons is food for them. Some of them in Asia will eat humus out of the soil. The big mounds you see in northern Australia, right around the west, those are all grass eaters. They go and capture grass and cut it up into cute little measured sticks and store it away to eat during the wet season.
Really? So what about the ones that concern us here mostly, which is the ones that eat your house?
Yeah, most of the damage done around Australia is by what we call coptotermes. It just means eastern termite. Termes is Latin for woodworm. And coptotermes are sort of from around Turkey, right around through Asia. They've come to Australia as we've approached Asia, but they've been here for several million years, longer than the gum trees have been here.
Longer than the gum trees, so, but they eat gum trees.
Yes, so they have a wonderfully tight coevolution. Neither wins the battle. They can hollow out the tree, often to the tree's advantage. That's kind of fun. You know how, imagine a piece of pipe and a piece of rod. It's much easier to bend the rod than the pipe.
Yes.
Yeah, so for a tree, as it has to keep getting wider as it grows, eventually it pays a gum tree to get hollow. So they let the termites in. It's a natural part of things.
Interesting. And then the hollow provides the home for birds and little animals and all sorts of things.
And the termites turn the useless wood back into nutrient that the trees will retake. In some tropical forests, the trees will grow roots back into the hollows.
When they build those big mounds that you see, and I've seen pictures of them, I mean,
they're huge.
They're higher than the ceiling of the studio here, aren't they? How tall are they?
In Australia, they rarely get more than 3 to 5 metres.
Pretty high.
The house eating ones. The others can be higher. You can get 7 without any trouble.
Extraordinary. Is it true they build or they inbuild some kind of a cooling system of some kind?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Oh, there's some wonderful work. Peter Jacklin, who worked at the ABC Science Unit, did work on those last. The obvious ones are the north-south magnetic termites that live in the swamps in the far north. They have a mound which is a flat blade, and it faces vaguely north-south, but it's aligned to the sun so that it heats up in the morning and the afternoon, but not in the midday. And that's
because the
sun's kind of
shining.
Cute.
Oh, that's very clever, isn't it?
Yeah, all the other mounds are mainly designed in ways that maximise their control of the nursery temperature. So where they raise their young doesn't change by more than 1 degree a day throughout the whole year.
It's incredible, isn't it?
When you think that
it's amazing, because when you think at night in the desert, for instance,
yes,
the temperature in winter can fall to freezing, and in summer can go up to 45 degrees, can't it?
In the mountains east of Melbourne, I've studied mounds where when I went to them in the early morning, it was -1.6, and it was 23 degrees in the mound. So it's quite an achievement.
It's very, very incredible. Are they like bees, where they have a queen and then she makes all the workers work and feed her and all
that?
We
were taught this, but that's not how it works. The female reproductive does produce a lot of hormones which influence a lot of behaviour, but termites make decisions on the hoof. Engineers are very interested on the way termites organise things for traffic and robotics and stuff. Basically, for example, when they're deciding where to walk, they lay down a scent trail. Most of them will lay down 2 scents, a short-term scent which will evaporate in a few hours and a long-term scent that will last for months. And they get very excited by the short-term scent, and they will follow that. And the more that follow it, then they will work out which way to go. So if a termite finds food, it has to convince the others that it's worth following. So it really is a sort of a glorified chaos with very simple rules.
Do they have a brain?
Yeah, they have very small brains.
So they figure this out. I mean, this sort of behaviour is behaviour that is sort of imprinted in them somehow, is it?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they don't make unilateral decisions, do they?
Oh, yes, they will decide whether to turn left or right. You can do that. And they have certain biases. When they're going out looking for food, they go out much more slowly than they come back. You know, they obviously make decisions by themselves, but it's not fully understood. The termites that eat our houses are all the oldest style of termite, and they're very much reliant on the organisms in their gut. They basically control how the animal behaves. So the termite, you can imagine, is like a little compost bin with legs. And the organisms in its gut are very good at putting out signals to the termite as to what they need, and they very much drive the behaviours.
Does the male take any interest, or do males take any interest after the eggs are laid? I mean, do they have
yes,
any...
Yes, they stick around. They don't store sperm.
And
for
she
long
doesn't
periods.
Eat him, for instance.
No, but it's very common, particularly in the Nasutatamis. From East Coast, you'll see little sort of dark lumps on the side of trees up in the air. The ones that do that, and down the south coast and into northern South Australia, the people will know the mounds that they can kick without their foot hurting. Those ones, they're very interesting in the way they control things. Yeah, I've lost my train of thought. Yeah, now.
No, but it's, yeah. it is interesting. Just tell me how long they live, then we'll get on to the houses.
Oh, okay. I've kept them in the lab for in excess of 3 years. There was a wonderful study based on the Overland Telegraph near Alice Springs where they'd figured that one mount had been there for about 50 years.
And it was the same termites.
They believe so. There are mounds in South Africa that have, because they have that evaporative cooling, there's salt deposition from the cooling tower sort of effect. So they can study the salt deposition, and they've worked out that they've been constantly inhabited for 4,000 to 7,000 years.
Gosh. I think we'd better go to your next piece of music, which is a song from a group called the Woodbox, the Woodbox Gang. Tell me who these are or what the song is.
Oh, this is just an appalling American tune.
Is it? Well, we won't yeah, tell, will we? Let's play it.
In my forks, poking at your cat. I've been tasting your love letters, thrown up in your hat. I've been hiding in your walls and plotting with your mouse. I'm hungry and I'm gonna eat your house. I've been dancing with your shadow all over your bug light, singing in your sprinkler and building up an appetite. I've been hiding in your walls and plotting with your mouse. I'm hungry and I'm gonna eat your house. Some houses are made of stone.
There we go, the termite song. That's a group called the Woodbox Gang from a record called Drunk as Dragons. I like all of that. Don Hewitt was the one that asked for that. He's a termite specialist. And they talked about bed bugs in the end. That's a whole other story, isn't it?
Yes, they're very different and quite a problem.
Quite a problem. In fact, I can quickly just say a friend of mine was looking at an apartment to rent in Manhattan, mm-hmm, and went into the foyer with the agent with the key ready to go and have a look. And there was a man carrying out big bags of linen. And she said, oh, are you going on holidays or something like that? And he said, no, I'm getting rid of the bed bugs. Okay. So she walked out, turned around and walked out the other end.
Yes.
Let's get now to houses. If people live in brick houses or stone houses, they have absolutely nothing to worry about with termites. Is that true or not?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
It is an option under the building code to build a house so that if termites get in, it won't fall down. That's okay, but they'll still do a lot of damage.
To what?
They'll take out your floors, floating floors, cork tiles.
If you have concrete floors?
Trim timbers. No, they won't eat concrete floors most of the time. No. They'll damage weak concrete. They'll eat your plasterboard, take the paper off it.
No.
They'll take out your kitchen cupboard. Sometimes they'll eat the clothes.
But how will they get into the kitchen cupboards if I've got a brick house?
Oh, there's always gaps in bricks.
Are there? Oh, so they'll realise there's timber up there somewhere.
Yes, they'll come through. Yep.
Oh.
Yes, so they'll come.
They have bigger brains.
They'll come
than I
through
thought.
Your brick walls and up and eat the roof timbers when they're not too hot.
Really?
Yeah.
What, they fly through, presumably?
Oh, no, they build their little tubes. They'll explore. They'll go quite a distance from the ground to get good food.
And can they smell it? How do they know it's there?
Yes. Often it smells best. How to explain this? You know how you can smell dry grass when it's just got damp?
Yes.
So that's not very much scent coming off the grass, but it travels a long way. If the timber is a little bit moist, if there's high humidity, through a cavity that scent will travel a long way. So termites will come up through the cavities in your brick wall and attack your ceiling.
So even if the timber's as dry as can be, but the humidity is high,
then they will, yes.
Oh.
But if they have to take a drink to their food, they're less likely to attack. So the main way we control them is by separating food from water.
If you put your house on, not on stilts, but on ant caps, what they call ant caps.
Yes.
If all the studs are put on ant caps, which seems to be sensible.
Does
that stop them?
It slows them down.
Right.
The cap doesn't stop them, but it makes them visible. So they have to build a big clay tube around to get through. And they're less likely to do that. The most durable houses in Australia are the high-set Queenslanders, which are just
wonderful. Are they? But aren't they on timber?
Well, yes, but when they eat the timber, you just kick that out and put another one in.
Unless if the house hasn't fallen down in the meantime.
Well, you have to lose a few before it gets bad.
How quickly could they walk, could they chew through a house?
With if they're starting a colony, if it's just two flying in, then it will take them 20 years or more. But if you, like they did once at Forest Lake in out of Brisbane, bulldoze the termite colonies and then build the house straight on top, you can have severe damage within 3 years. So if a mature colony of 1 to 2 million termites decides that you're the best place to eat, they can move quickly. In northern New South Wales and Brisbane now, the most common termite, the ones we call Shedderhina termes, they're sort of nomads. They just travel around in a band and eat whatever's good.
When you say colony, do you mean nest? Is that the same thing?
No, a colony is the behavioural unit that shares. So in some areas, a colony can have multiple nests.
The nest is the location.
Yes. Well, some will have a central nest. So the coptotermes that eat your house, they will have a set nest, usually in the base of a tree or some big bit of timber.
So a tree that's away from the house somewhere.
Yeah, it can be 50 metres or more. It can be two houses away.
Oh. And how do they get to your house then? Underground?
Well, they're subterranean termites. They will walk through the ground. They can tunnel, but they prefer to use gaps. So they, will go quite a distance.
They're determined things, aren't they? Now, if you use chemically treated timber in the construction of your house, are you protected?
This is a big worry. As I said before, in New South Wales and the ACT, there's a big push where builders are selling people high-priced housing with vaguely treated timber where the termites can still get in, and that worries me a lot because they can still do about half as much damage. That doesn't protect you. What we normally do is put in a management system when you build the house that prevents them from getting in where you can't see that they're doing it.
What if you put your house on metal foundations?
Yeah. Some of the companies, BHP, whatever they're called now, sell a metal stump you can build your house on, which is pretty safe.
And they can't traverse that? I mean, would they go up it? Would they go up it?
Yes, they'll go up it. I've seen them go 3 metres up a steel frame in a farmer's shed and on power poles. I've seen them tube up, I guess I'm thinking old term, 30 feet to eat the crossarm when they change the crossarms. So if it's good food, they'll go a long way to get it.
God, they do, don't they?
Yeah, they're persistent.
They sure are. So we're talking humidity, we're talking dampness, which is caused sometimes by a leaking pipe.
Yeah, often shower recesses leak, not venting your tumble dryer, all that sort of stuff.
Not venting your tumble dryer, right?
But in some places, it's just coastal and humid and there's always enough moisture.
But let's keep with this what you can do that can kind of... How can you tell whether, if you walk into a house, are there signs?
Years of training.
Yeah, okay.
If it's really bad, you can tell.
How?
You can spot... Well, it used to be that the mother of the house would discover when a vacuum cleaner poked a hole in the skirting board. But that was great when we had susceptible skirting boards. Now they're all fibreboard and it's the last thing they eat. You can see that the timber changes shape. You get bubbles in the paint. They eat right to the paint.
So they'll leave the paint.
Yeah, they're very good at leaving as just enough of the timber to take the steady load. I mean, if you live in trees, you've got to be good at that. Mm. So wavy surfaces and things like that will pick it. Little bits of mud where there shouldn't be. If you find a speck of mud looks like a fly spot on the wall, wipe it off and it comes back the next day. That's a big worry.
Mm. Because behind it might be...
Yeah. We have all sorts of wonderful tools. There's a Queensland company, Termatrack, invented a wonderful little radar unit that we use that picks up a grain of rice-sized thing moving in the wall.
And you can also pick up how much dampness is in a wall.
There are
dampness
indicators,
aren't there?
That sort of They don't really measure moisture, but they're a good way of telling if there's moisture there. They measure density.
And I was reading that you shouldn't let, if you're sprinkling, watering the garden, you shouldn't water up close to the wall, is
no,
that right?
No,
you shouldn't have plants growing along the wall of the house.
No, if you want your house to last a long time, you should keep your gardens a couple of metres away from the wall.
A couple of metres? What about the hydrangeas up against the wall? They look beautiful.
Yeah, they do. Hydrangeas aren't so bad, but it does increase your risk.
Golly.
And if you've got a chemical system around the house, then your garden does tend to damage the chemical over time.
I was going to ask you that about a perimeter.
Yeah, mostly they poison the soil. You can spray the soil, although these days people mostly go for a piping system. So they just come and it's like an irrigation around the house. They pump it up every few years.
What, the poison?
Yeah.
What about baits? Are there baits that you can lay?
Yeah, there's plenty of baits. I love working on baits because it's kind of like fishing. You've got to be good at what you do. We tend to use American systems of baits. Baits can kill a colony, but they don't give you any ongoing protection. Often it's the best thing to do, but then the next colony along can move in a few months later.
And the poison will not affect them?
Well, eventually it might, but that will get rid of your immediate problem, but it gives you no protection.
How often should Australians generally have their houses inspected for termites?
The standard answer, according to what we wrote in the standards for managing termites, is at least every 12 months.
And this is for people with brick houses too?
This is for everybody. I check mine slightly less often. If you're in a very risky area, every 6 months is often advised.
But if you have a timber house, if you have a weatherboard house, for instance?
A lot of inner urban places, like around Sydney, you've got houses where the termites can come through the wall from next door and things like that. So you've got no way to stop them. Houses built on slabs are often at a higher risk, particularly if they're older, lower quality slabs. So, I still go back to the high-set Queenslander. You mightn't like climbing the stairs, but it's the safest way to avoid problems.
Isn't it funny? I would have thought it would have been the most dangerous one of all, but because it's elevated from the ground is what protects it.
Yes, a suspended floor, the old-style timber floor on stumps, the air blowing underneath takes the moisture and the scent away.
Mm.
So that can make life a lot easier.
So that's why builders tell you you should have ventilation under the house, even if you're low down.
Yes. Yeah, there's a specification in the building code.
Yeah,
it used to be 7,200 square millimetres per metre of perimeter or something. But
gee, it's scary stuff, isn't it, though?
If you've got vents, keep them clear.
Yeah.
Get rid of the spider webs. Don't have vegetation up against them.
Yeah. All good advice. Can we stop for a moment and listen to your next choice, which is by Delib. It's the Coppelia Waltz. Why ballet music here?
My father was injured in the war. He was, military as we've established. He lost a large part of his brain at the very end of the war in Bougainville, and he couldn't remember much of his music playing, but for some reason he could play the Coppelia Waltz, which was a standard sort of grade 3 student tune at the time. And I have very fond memories of him playing that.
Okay. recording made ages ago, we think about the late 1920s. Ernest Ernst von Dohnányi was the pianist and the Coppelia waltz by Delibes, bringing back some very fragrant memories for our guest today, Don Hewitt, who's a termite specialist. You talk about the military history. Was it your father or was it a family thing to be in the military?
Well, my grandfather was Fourth Light Horse, you know, Gallipoli and all that. My father went to Duntroon. He was a country boy in Wangaratta, and that was a way to get ahead. So he was training to be an officer when war broke out. And, yeah, it was a bit tough.
And he had an eventful war.
Yes, he fought in New Guinea and was injured and then got back together and went to Bougainville and got injured. He carried long-term brain damage. He got tinnitus, constant ringing in the ears, and sort of tunnel vision. But he retrained as a physiotherapist. And
did he?
Did very well. Did a lot for partially blinded soldiers, got an OBE.
Really? That's terrific. Yeah. What about your... Whereabouts were you born, Don, and how many of the you were there in the Hewitt family?
Oh, I have two brothers and a sister. I was born in Canterbury in Melbourne, lovely leafy suburb.
And plenty of termites, probably.
Yeah, I never really saw them. When I was a kid, I was very sickly, and they sent me off to live in the country up near Wangaratta in the foothills of the mountains for a year. And that's where I first saw termites. I was in grade five, so I was pretty young, just me and my dog sent away.
Really? To live with who?
Friends of a family, but they were the workers on a corporate farm.
And so did it affect your health? Did it make your health better?
Oh, I got healthier, but I certainly learned to be independent.
You went to school there, did you?
Yes, I went to I went to Meadow Creek State School. It was about 8 to 12 students during the time. It was, it was quite good.
Is it still there, do you think?
No, the school's gone. It got sold off. There weren't enough people in the area. It's picking up now. It's a lovely place, Meadow Creek. If you're driving out of Moyhu, definitely worth visiting.
When you think back on that time, do you think it was important in sort of shaping the person you became?
Oh, very much so. I did a lot of work in early childhood education later, and it's very clear that those early experiences really determine who you are. So, yeah, I got to see different things, do different things.
And then you had to go back to Melbourne to high school, did you?
Yeah. Well, they sent me back to state school for the last bit so that I could get into the high school. In those days, it was very limited. So, I went to Camberwell High.
And when you finished school, what explains the path into being a termite specialist?
Oh, yes, okay. Well,
because you're an entomologist.
I was a happy-go-lucky sort of a guy, early 70s, and thought I'd go and... At first I was going to be an engineer, and I thought, no, I'll think about that. So I went to be a biologist because I wanted to study ecology. I mean, in the early 70s, ecology was very important. So I went off to La Trobe and did relatively well. I wanted to be a botanist and work in the Alps, but I did better in zoology. So they offered me an honours year, and I thought, well, I better do a study that's useful. So I asked the Park Service what they wanted studied, and we just had a wet year where the desert lakes in Victoria had filled up, and all the people had burned every stick of firewood that was there, and they were worried about the long-term effects. So my brief was to work out whether this would damage the ecology. So I naturally thought I'd go and study everything that used dead timber, and quickly learned that I'd better study the termites because they were important in making it available to the other animals.
So you became an entomologist eventually.
Yes.
And your expertise is in termites, but you do know a lot about other insects as well, don't you?
Oh, yes. I've just written an academic book chapter on wood borers, so that's all beetles. And
are they related to termites at all?
No. Beetles are very different.
Are they?
Yeah.
Different family, different...
Oh, yes, Coleoptera.
Yeah.
Beetles are the most numerous thing around.
What are bedbugs, since we were talking about bedbugs?
Oh, bedbugs are little sucking in pest insects. They're very small. If anyone wants to know about bedbugs or has a problem with it, Westmead Hospital have a website, And there's a wonderful code of practice produced by the industry on how to respond to them that gives you good advice. So don't go reading the internet about America because you'll get all sorts of silly advice.
Really? Yeah. What is the advice if you suddenly find... I mean, they're horrible, I imagine. I've never had them, but they'd be horrible.
I always look for them. I've been in lots of hotels where there's been signs, but then you worry about the pesticide residues. Yeah, they are kind of annoying.
And they suck your blood like a mosquito.
Yes, they come
does.
Out at night and suck your blood and then disappear. Yeah. They can go months without a feed.
Gosh. Oh, I don't like them. I don't like them by the sound of them, actually.
Well, they're very good at it.
Never have it. Yeah, but they're very efficient. Can we listen to your next choice, which comes from The Great Race, music by Henry Mancini? What are we hearing?
Okay. Do you know the film about 1965 or 66? It was Tony Curtis, a Blake Edwards film. Tony Curtis was the good guy all in white. I think it was Natalie Wood? I don't know. But the bad guy was Jack Lemmon and his assistant was Peter Falk.
Ah.
And so this is the theme for the Peter Falk character, who was Maximilian something, and the name of the theme is Push the Button, Max.
And he was a baddie.
Yes, they were.
So this is
they
bad.
Were the baddies.
This is baddie music.
Yes.
Soundtrack of the film The Great Race, Henry Mancini's music, and it's a track called Push the Button, Max, and that's the baddie music for Peter Falk. I think that's good. Don Hewitt asked for that. Don, is it true that there are parts of the world where termites are regarded as a delicacy to eat?
Yes, yes. In most places around the world, people will eat termites.
Have you eaten them?
Yeah, just for the fun of it. I prefer green ants. Those of you who are up north, green ants are much nicer tasting.
How do you cook them?
Generally, the people... Oh, there's a really good film you can get on YouTube, but it has a rude name, so I can't say it. You can find it on YouTube, where a guy uses animal manure to collect them, and then you see... it's easy to trap termites, and basically they just fry them off. If you get the winged ones, the wings will drop off when they fry there. They're much better nutrition than steak. If you think about it, the female carries in her little abdomen enough protein to make 30 more termites, plus to keep her going for a couple of months. So it's a pretty neat trick.
Gosh.
They're good eating. They're sort of nutty.
You mentioned them doing some early childhood work. Just expand on that a little bit.
Okay. When I was finishing my doctorate, I got a wonderful lectureship at the... What began as the Melbourne College of Advanced Education. It was the old Kindergarten Teachers College in Melbourne, a fabulous place that it had a tremendous history. And my job was to teach kindergarten and childcare students science, which was the hardest job I've ever done.
You weren't teaching the little children. You were teaching their
teachers. No, I was teaching
teachers.
The students.
I see.
Great because you'd come up with a new trick and you'd tell them and they go out and use it and you'd get really good feedback. But you had to do things like work out how to explain to five-year-olds why the sky was blue to the phases of the moon. So we'd be in a room with torches and the lights turned off And it's hard work to explain some of that.
I can imagine, yeah. And, in fact, teaching little children is a whole art and craft and profession of its own.
Oh, but it's immense value.
With your personal experience, I bet you'd be one that would think that exposure to the environment, to living and playing and exploring in the environment, is important for children.
Oh, absolutely. Well, most of my work was called exploration of the environment. It was teaching skills so that they could explore what was there, learn about the plants and animals, how things fitted together.
I've read some, while I was reading for you for this interview today, I read some funny little anecdotes about termites. One was about a woman, a very rich woman, who took all the money out of the bank because she didn't trust the bank that was going to keep it and put it in a cupboard or something, and the termites ate the whole hundreds of thousands
happens.
Of dollars. Ate the banknotes.
Yes, but in...
They won't eat polymer notes, I presume, Australian polymer.
No, they don't. They're pretty safe. But in India, and I think it was in Malaysia recently, there were two banks where the termites got into the boxes and ate deeds and money. So
really?
It does happen.
And what's the worst damage you've seen? I mean, you must have seen some doozies in your life.
Yeah, I've seen... One of the worst was a house in Perth. Dianella, where I went to do an inspection and I put my ladder up and I moved the hatch to get into the ceiling and I put my hands up to lift myself up.
And the ceiling fell down.
My thumbs and fingers just about touched, so I didn't go any further because it was a tile roof. I just left that place.
What? So it's like a house of cards. Once you touch it just all...
Well, the termites leave enough timber to take the load, but if you stand on it, then the load's increased and it can just collapse on you.
So. You wonder how they know that. I mean, I know they've evolved along with trees and they've worked out how to hollow out a tree without the tree falling down.
NASA paid money to study that, but it comes pretty simply. Their jaws go sideways, so that if something is pushing down on their jaws, it's like if you're cutting a tree with an axe. If it starts to compress, then they'll feel the sticking on the jaw and they'll know to stop. But for flooring and things, they'll eat right up to the varnish sometimes. So
I've seen it in my life.
They respond to vibration. Theo Evans, who was at CSIRO, and the military people at ADFA worked on how resonance occurs in timbers, and termites will eat different size timbers at different rates. They really like the resonance.
So you've got everybody who's listening to this conversation on alert, thinking they've got to do something instantly in case they've got termites. What's your best advice to people?
What are we now? October. Your pest managers are getting busy, so if you haven't had an inspection for a while, try and schedule one within the next month when they're not going to be flat out. But yes, the thing to do is to have a regular inspection by a competent pest inspector.
Mm, okay. And keep doing it every year.
Well, yeah, as they recommend.
Yeah. Don, you're a font of knowledge. Thank you so much for coming and joining us today. And will you tell us about your last piece of music, which is by Tim Minchin?
Oh, I went to London and... I saw this at the Cambridge Theatre. It's a brilliant stage show. I mean, Tim Minchin is
called
just
Matilda.
Such fun. Yes, and it's the Roald Dahl story, so it's a bit sort of harsh, but if you can see it, the stagecraft, and it won lots of awards, but this is an optimistic tune, so I kind of like that.
You know? And,
it fits with the children thing.
From the London cast recording.
Yeah.
Before you're grown up. And when I grow up, I will eat sweets every day. On the way to work, and I will go to bed late every night. And I will wake up when the sun comes up, and I will watch cartoons until my eyes go square. And I won't care, 'cause I'll be all grown up when I grow up. Oh, no.
When I Grow Up, a song from the musical Matilda by Tim Minchin, the original London cast recording, final choice of Don Hewitt, who's a consulting entomologist specialising in termites but working with all types of insect pests, currently involved in the rewriting of Australian termite management standards. Don Hewitt on ABC Classic FM in an interview that was first heard last month in October. Now, tomorrow, Dr. Alan Finkel, Chancellor of Monash University. We met him in July. He was addressing the Academy of Technological Sciences and Engineering Conference and the Creative Innovation Conference in Melbourne. So Alan Finkel is our guest tomorrow at the usual time. I hope you can listen. Bob Maynard with Afternoon, Sydney Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Nicholas Carter, coming up after the news.
This feature was produced by ABC Classic FM. You'll find more audio of our programs, along with special features for download, on our website at abc.net.au/classic/audio.